Today I'll be continuing off from Venerable Kantiko's reading of Lumpur Sumedho's Four Noble Truths. I will do the second noble truth today, and if there's time I might do the third, but start with the second. It's available in the first volume of the anthology, and there is also a smaller Four Noble Truths book, I think. Came out a while back. The second noble truth. The second noble truth, with its three aspects, is there is the origin of suffering, which is the attachment to desire. Desire should be let go of. Desire has been let go of. The second noble truth states that there is an origin of suffering, and that the origin of suffering is attachment to the three kinds of desire. Desire for sense pleasure, kama tanha, desire for to become, bhava tanha, and desire to get rid of, vibhava tanha. This is the statement of the second noble truth, the thesis, the pariyatti. This is what you contemplate. The origin of suffering is the attachment to desire. Desire, or tanha in Pali, is an important thing to understand. What is desire? Kama tanha is very easy to understand. This kind of desire is wanting sense pleasures through the body or the other senses and always seeking things to excite or please your senses. That is kama tanha. You can really contemplate, what is it like when you have desire for pleasure? For example, when you are eating, if you are hungry and the food tastes delicious, you can be aware of the wanting to take another bite. Notice that feeling when you are tasting something pleasant. And notice how you want more of it. Don't just believe this. Try it out. Don't think you know it because it has been that way in the past. Try it out when you eat. Taste something delicious and see what happens. A desire arises for more. That is kama tanha. We also contemplate a feeling of wanting to become something. If there is ignorance, then when we are not seeking something delicious to eat or some beautiful music to listen to, we could become caught in a realm of ambition and attainment, the desire to become. We get caught in that movement of striving to become happy, seeking to become wealthy, or we might attempt to make our life feel important by endeavoring to make the world right. So note this sense of wanting to become something other than what you are right now. Listen to bhava tanha in your life. I want to practice meditation so I can be free of my pain. I want to become enlightened. I want to become a monk or nun. I want to become enlightened as a layperson. I want to have a wife and a children and a profession. I want to enjoy the sense world without having to give up anything and become enlightened arhant too. When we get disillusioned with trying to become something, then there is desire to get rid of things. So we contemplate vibhava tanha, the desire to get rid of. I want to get rid of my suffering. I want to get rid of my anger. I got this anger. I want to get rid of it. I want to get rid of jealousy, fear, and anxiety. Notice this as a reflection on vibhava tanha. We're actually contemplating that within ourselves which wants to get rid of things. We are not trying to get rid of vibhava tanha. We are not taking a stand against the desire to get rid of things, nor are we encouraging that desire. Instead, we are reflecting. It's like this. It feels like this when I want to get rid of something. I've got to conquer my anger. I have to kill the devil. I've got to get rid of my greed, and then I'll become. We can see this train of thought that becoming and getting rid of becoming are very much associated. Bear in mind that though there are these three categories of kama tanha, bhava tanha, and vibhava tanha, they are merely convenient ways of contemplating desire. They are not totally separate forms of desire, but different aspects of it. The second insight to the second noble truth is, desire should be let go of. This is how letting go comes into our practice. You have an insight that desire should be let go of, but that insight is not a desire to let go of anything. If you're not very wise and not really reflecting in your mind, you tend to follow the, I want to get rid of, I want to let go of all my desires. But this is just another desire. However, you can reflect upon it, and you can see the desire to get rid of, the desire to become, or the desire for sense pleasure. By understanding these three kinds of desire, you can let go. The second noble truth does not ask you to think, I have a lot of central desires, or I'm really ambitious. I'm really a Bhavatanha plus, plus, plus. Or I'm a real nihilist. I just want out. I'm a real Vibhavatanha fanatic. That's me. The second noble truth is not that. It is not about identifying with desires in any way. It's about recognizing desire. I used to spend a lot of time watching how much of my practice was desire to become something. For example, how much of the good intention of my meditation practice as a monk was to become liked, how much my relations with other monks or nuns or with lay people had to do with wanting to become liked or to be approved of. That is Bhavatanha, desire for praise and success. As a monk, you have this Bhavatanha, wanting people to understand everything and appreciate the Dhamma. Even the subtle, almost noble desires are Bhavatanha. Then there's the Vibhavatanha in spiritual life, which can be very self-righteous. I want to get rid of, annihilate, and exterminate these defilements. I really listen to myself thinking, I want to get rid of desire. I want to get rid of anger. I don't want to be frightened or jealous anymore. I want to be brave. I want to have joy and gladness in my heart. This practice of Dhamma is not one of hating oneself for having such thoughts, but really seeing that they are conditioned into the mind. They are impermanent. Desire is not what we are, but is the way we tend to react out of ignorance when we have not understood these Four Noble Truths in the three aspects. We tend to react like that to everything. These are the normal reactions due to ignorance. But we need not to continue to suffer. We are not hopeless victims of desire. We can allow desire to be the way it is and begin to let go of it. Desire has the power over us and deludes us only as long as we grasp it, believe it, and react to it. Usually we equate suffering with feeling, but feeling is not suffering. It is grasping of desire that is suffering. Desire does not cause suffering. The cause of suffering is the grasping of desire. The statement is for reflection and contemplation in terms of your own individual experience. You really have to investigate desire and know what it is. You have to know what is natural and necessary for survival and what is not necessary for survival. We can be very idealistic in thinking that even the need for food and some kind of desire we should not have. One can be quite ridiculous about it, but the Buddha was not an idealist and he was not a moralist. He was not trying to condemn anything. He was trying to awaken us to the truth and so that we can see things clearly. Once there is clarity in seeing things in the right way, then there is no suffering. You can feel hunger. You can still need the food without having it become a desire. Food is a natural need of the body. The body is not self. It needs food, otherwise it will get very weak and die. That is the nature of the body. There is nothing wrong with that. If we get very moralistic and high-minded and we believe that we are the bodies, then hunger is our own problem and that we should not even eat, that is not wisdom. It's foolishness. When you really see the origin of suffering, you realize the problem is the grasping of desire and not the desire itself. Grasping means being deluded by it, thinking it's really me and mine. These desires are me, and there's something wrong with me for having them. I don't like the way I am right now. I have to become something else, or I have to get rid of something before I can become what I want to be. All that is desire. If you listen to it with bare attention, not saying it's good or bad, but by merely recognizing it, merely recognize it for what it is. If we contemplate desires and listen to them, we are actually no longer attaching to them. We are just allowing them to be the way they are. Then we come to the realization of the origin of suffering. Desire can be laid aside and let go of. How do you let go of things? That means you have to leave them as they are. It does not mean you annihilate them or throw them away. It is more like setting them down and letting them be. Through the practice of letting go, we realize that there is the origin of suffering, which is the attachment to desire, and we realize we should let go of these three kinds of desire. Then we realize that we have to let go of these desires. There is no longer any attachment to them. When you find yourself attached, remember that letting go is not getting rid of or throwing away. If I'm holding on to this clock and you say, let go of it, that doesn't mean throw it out. I might think that I have to throw it away because I'm attached to it, but that would be just trying to get rid of it. We tend to think that getting rid of that object is a way of getting rid of attachment. But if I can contemplate attachment, this grasping of the clock, I realize there's no point of getting rid of it. It's a good clock. It keeps good time, and it's not heavy to carry around. The clock is not the problem. The problem is grasping the clock. So what do I do? Let it go, lay it aside, put it down gently without any kind of aversion. Then I can pick it up again, see what time it is, and lay it aside whenever necessary. You can apply this insight into letting go to the desire for sense pleasures. Maybe you want to have a lot of fun. How would you lay aside that desire without any aversion? Simply recognize the desire without judging it. You can contemplate wanting to get rid of it because you feel guilty about having such a foolish desire, but just lay it aside. Then you see it as it is, recognizing that it's just desire. You are no longer attached to it. So the way it's always working with the moments of daily life. When you're feeling depressed and negative, just the moment that you refuse to indulge in that feeling is an enlightenment experience. When you see that, you need not sink into the sea of depression and despair and wallow in it. You can actually stop by learning not to give things a second thought. You have to find this out through practice so you will know for yourself how to let go of the origin of suffering. Can you let go of desire by wanting to let go of it? What is it that is really letting go in a given moment? You have to contemplate the experience of letting go and really examine and investigate until insight comes. Keep with it until insight comes. Ah, letting go. Yes, now I understand. Desire is being let go of. That doesn't mean you are going to let go of desire forever, but at that one moment, you actually have let go and you have done it with full conscious awareness. There is insight then. That is what we call insight knowledge. In Pali, we call it jnanadasana, or profound understanding. I had my first insight to letting go my first year of meditation. I figured out intellectually you have to let go of everything, and then I thought, how do you let go? It seemed impossible to let go of anything. I kept contemplating, how do you let go? Then I would say, you let go by letting go. Well, then, let's go. Then I would say, but have I let go of yet? And how do you let go? Well, just let go. I went on like that, getting more frustrated. But eventually it became obvious what was happening. If you try to analyze letting go in detail, you get caught up in making it very complicated. It was not something that you could figure out in words anymore, but something you actually did. So I just let go for a moment, just like that. Now, with personal problems and obsessions, to let go of them is just that much. It's not a matter of analyzing and endlessly making more of a problem about them, but of practicing that state of leaving things alone, letting go of them. At first, you let go, but then you pick them up again because the habit of grasping is so strong. But at least you have the idea. Even when I had that insight into letting go, I let go for a moment, but then I started grasping by thinking, I can't do it. I have so many bad habits. But don't trust that kind of nagging, disparaging thing in yourself. It's totally untrustworthy. It's just a matter of practicing letting go. The more you begin to see how to do it, then the more you're able to sustain the state of non-attachment. It's important to know when you have to let go of desire, when you no longer judge or try to get rid of it, when you recognize that it's just the way it is. When you are really calm and peaceful, then you will find that there's no attachment to anything. You're not caught up trying to get something or trying to get rid of something. Well-being is just knowing things as they are without feeling the necessity to pass judgment upon them. We say all the time, this shouldn't be like this. It shouldn't be this way. And you shouldn't be like this. And you shouldn't do that. And so on and so on. I'm sure I could tell you what you should be. And you could tell me what I should be. We should be kind, loving, generous, good-hearted, hardworking, diligent, courageous, brave, and compassionate. I don't have to know you at all to tell you that. But to really know you, I would have to open up to you rather than start from an ideal about what a woman or a man should be, what a Buddhist should be, or what a Christian should be. It's not that we don't know what we should be. Our suffering comes from the attachment that we have to ideals and the complexities we create about the way things are. We are never what we are should be according to our highest ideals. Life, others, the country we are, country we live in, the world we live in, things never seem to be what they should be. We become very critical of everything and of ourselves. I know I should be more patient, but I can't be patient. Listen to all the shoulds and should nots and the desires, wanting to be pleasant, wanting to become, or wanting to get rid of the ugly and the painful. It's like listening to somebody talking over the fence saying, I want this and I don't want that. I should be this way and it shouldn't be that way. Really take time to listen to the complaining mind, bring it into consciousness. I used to do a lot of this when I felt discontented and critical. I would close my eyes and start thinking, I don't like this. I don't want that. That person shouldn't be like this. And the world shouldn't be like that. I would keep listening to this kind of critical demon that would go on and on, criticizing me, you, and the world. Then I would think, I want happiness and comfort. I want to feel safe. I want to be loved. I would deliberately think these things out and listen to them in order to know them simply as conditions that arise in the mind. So bring them into your mind. Arouse all hopes, desires, and criticisms. Bring them into consciousness. Then you will know desire and you'll be able to let them lay them aside. The more we contemplate and investigate grasping, the more insight arises. Desire should be let go of. Then, through the actual practice and understanding what letting go really is, we have the third insight into the second noble truth, which is desire has been let go of. We actually know letting go. It's not a theoretical letting go, but a direct insight. You know letting go has been accomplished. This is what practice is all about. I'll go ahead and read the third noble truth. It's not too much longer. The third noble truth with its three aspects is there is a cessation of suffering, of dukkha. The cessation of dukkha should be realized. The cessation of dukkha has been realized. The whole aim of Buddhist teaching is to develop the reflective mind in order to let go of delusions. The Four Noble Truths are teaching about letting go by investigating or looking into, contemplating. Why is it like this? Why is it this way? It's good to ponder over things like why monks shave their heads or why Buddha Rupas look the way they do. We contemplate. The mind is not forming an opinion about whether they are good, bad, or useful, or useless. The mind is actually opening and considering. What does this mean? What do the monks represent? Why do they carry alms bowls? Why can't they have money? Why can't they grow their own food? We contemplate how this way of living has sustained the tradition and allowed it to be handed down from the original founder, Gautama the Buddha, to the present time. We reflect on we reflect as we see suffering, as we see the nature of desire, and as we recognize that attachment to desire is suffering. Then we have the insight of allowing desire to go and the realization of non-suffering, the cessation of suffering. These insights can only come through reflection. They can't come about through belief. You cannot make yourself believe or realize an insight as an act of will. Though really contemplating and pondering these truths, the insights will come to you. They come only through the mind being open and receptive to the teachings. Blind belief is certainly not advised or expected of anyone. Instead, the mind should be willing to be receptive, pondering, and considering these things. This mental state is very important. It is a way out of suffering. It is not a mind that has a fixed view or prejudices and thinks and knows it all. Or which just takes what other people say as being the truth. It is the mind that is open to these Four Noble Truths and can reflect upon something that we can see within our own mind. People rarely realize non-suffering because it takes a special kind of willingness to ponder and investigate and get beyond the gross and obvious. It takes a willingness to actually look at your own reactions, to be able to see the attachments and to contemplate. What does attachment feel like? For example, do you feel happy or liberated by being attached to desire? Is it uplifting or depressing? These questions are for you to investigate. If you find out that being attached to your desires is liberating, then do that. Attach to all your desires and see what the results are. In my practice, I have seen the attachments to my desires as suffering. There's no doubt about that. I can see how much suffering is in my life that has been caused by attachments to material things, to ideas, attitudes, or fears. I can see all kinds of unnecessary misery that I have caused myself through attachment because I didn't know any better. I was brought up in America, the land of freedom. It promises us the right to be happy, but what it really offers is the right to be attached to everything. America encourages you to try to be as happy as you can by getting things. However, if you are working with the Four Noble Truths, attachment is to be understood and contemplated, then the insight into non-attachment arises. This is not an intellectual stand or a command from your brain saying that you should not be attached. It's just a natural insight into non-attachment or non-suffering. Here at Amaravati, we chant the Dhamma Chakkappavattana Sutta in its traditional form. When the Buddha gave the sermon on the Four Noble Truths, only one of the five disciples who listened to it really understood. Only one had profound insight. The other four rather liked it, thinking, that's a very nice teaching. But only one of them, Kondanya, really had perfect understanding of what the Buddha was saying. The devas were also listening to the sermon. Devas are celestial, ethereal creatures vastly superior to us. They do not have coarse bodies like ours. They have ethereal bodies, and they are beautiful and lovely and intelligent. Now, although they were delighted to hear the sermon, not one of them was enlightened by it. We are told that they became very happy about the Buddha's enlightenment, and that they shouted up through the heavens when they heard the teachings. First, one level of devas heard it, then they shouted up to the next level, and soon all the devas were rejoicing, right up to the highest Brahma realm. There was a resounding joy that the wheel of Dhamma was set rolling and that these devas and Brahmas were rejoicing in it. However, only Kondanya, one of the five disciples, was enlightened when he heard that sermon. At the very end of the sutta, the Buddha called him Anya Kondanya. Anya means profound knowing. So Anya Kondanya means Kondanya who knows. What did Kondanya know? What was the insight that the Buddha praised at the very end of a sermon? It was, all that is subject to arising is subject to ceasing. Now this may not sound like any great knowledge, but what it really implies is a universal pattern. What is subject to arising is subject to ceasing. It is impermanent and not self. So don't attach. Don't be deluded by what arises and ceases. Don't look for your refuges, that which you want to abide in and trust, in anything that arises, because those things will cease. If you want to suffer and waste your life, go around seeking things that arise. They will all take you to the end, to cessation, and you will not be any wiser for it. You will go around repeating the same old dreary habits, and when you die, you will not learn anything important from your life. Rather than just thinking about it, really contemplate. All that is subject to arising is subject to ceasing. Apply it to life in general, to your own experience. Then you will understand. Just note, beginning, ending, contemplating how things are. This sensory realm is all about arising and ceasing, beginning and ending. They can be perfect understanding, samadhi, in this lifetime. I don't know how long Kondanya lived after the Buddha's sermon, but he was enlightened at that moment. Right then, he had perfect understanding. I'd like to emphasize how important it is to develop this way of reflecting, rather than just developing a method of tranquilizing our mind, which certainly is one part of the practice. Really see that proper meditation is a commitment to wise investigation. It involves a courageous effort to look deeply into things, not analyzing yourself or making judgments about why you suffer on a personal level, but resolving to really follow that path until you have profound understanding. Such perfect understanding is based upon the pattern of arising and ceasing. Once this law is understood, everything is seen as fitting into that pattern. This is not a metaphysical teaching. All that is subject to arising is subject to ceasing. It's not about ultimate reality, the deathless reality. But if you profoundly understand and know that all that is subject to arising and is subject to ceasing, then you will realize the ultimate reality, the deathless, the immortal truths. This is a skillful means to the ultimate realization. Notice the difference. The statement is not a metaphysical one, but one which takes us to the metaphysical realization. With a reflection on the Noble Truths, we bring into consciousness this very problem of human existence. We look at this sense of alienation and blind attachment to sensory consciousness, the attachment to that which is separate and stands forth in consciousness. Out of ignorance, we attach to desires for sense pleasures. When we identify with what is mortal and deathbound and what is unsatisfactory, that very attachment is suffering. Sense pleasures are all mortal pleasures. Whatever we see, hear, touch, taste, think, or feel is mortal, deathbound. So when we attach to the mortal senses, we attach to death. If we haven't contemplated or understood this, if we just attach blindly to mortality, hoping that we can stave off death for a while, we can pretend that we're going to be really happy with things we attach to, only to feel eventually disillusioned, despairing, and disappointed. We might succeed in becoming what we want, but that is also mortal. We're attaching to another death-bound condition. Then, with a desire to die, we might attach to suicide or to annihilation, but death itself is yet another death-bound condition. Whatever we attach to in these three kinds of desires, we're attaching to death, which means we're going to experience disappointment and despair. Death of the mind is despair. Depression is a kind of death experience of the mind. Just as the body dies a physical death, the mind dies. Mental states and mental conditions die. We call this despair, boredom, depression, and anguish. Whenever we attach, if we're experiencing boredom, despair, anguish, or sorrow, we tend to seek some other mortal condition that's arising. As an example, you can feel despair and you think, I want a piece of chocolate cake. Off you go. For a moment, you can absorb into that sweet, delicious chocolate flavor of that piece of cake. At that moment, there's becoming. You've actually become that sweet, delicious chocolate flavor. But you can't hold on to that very long. You swallow and what's left. Then you have to go on and do something else. This is becoming. We are blinded, caught in this becoming process on the central plane. But through knowing desire, without judging the beauty or ugliness of the central plane, we can come to see desire as it is. There's knowing. Then, by laying aside these desires rather than grasping at them, we experience Nirodha, the cessation of suffering. This is the third noble truth, which we must realize for ourselves. We contemplate cessation. We say, there is cessation, and we know something has ceased. Before you can let things go, you have to admit them fully into consciousness. In meditation, our aim is to skillfully allow the subconscious to arise into consciousness. All the despair, fears, anguish, suppression, and anger are allowed to become conscious. There is a tendency in people to hold to very high-minded ideals. We become disappointed in ourselves because sometimes we feel that we are not as good as we should be, or we should not feel angry, all the shoulds and shouldn'ts. Then we create the desire to get rid of all the bad things. This desire has a righteous quality. It seems right to get rid of bad thoughts, anger, and jealousy because a good person should not be like that. Thus, we create guilt. In reflecting on this, we bring them into consciousness, the desire to become this ideal, the desire to get rid of these bad things. By doing that, we can let go, so that rather than becoming the perfect person, you can let go of that desire. What left is the pure mind. There is no need to become the perfect person because the pure mind is where perfect people arise and cease. Cessation is easy to understand on an intellectual level, but to realize it may be quite difficult because this entails abiding with what we think we cannot bear. For example, when I first started meditating, I had the idea that meditation would make me kinder and happier. I was expecting to experience blissful mind states, but during the first 2 months, I never felt so much hatred and anger in my life. I thought, this is terrible. Meditation has made me worse. But then I contemplated, why was there so much hatred and aversion coming up? And I realized that much of my life had been an attempt to run away from all that. I used to be a compulsive reader. I would have to take books with me wherever I went. Anytime fear or aversion started creeping in, I would whip out my book and read. Or I would smoke or munch on snacks. I had an image of myself being a kind person who did not hate people, so any hint of aversion or hatred was repressed. This is why during the first few months as a monk, I was so desperate for things to do. I was trying to seek something to distract myself because I had started to remember in meditation all the things I had deliberately tried to forget. Memories from childhood and adolescence kept coming up in my mind. Then this anger and hatred became so conscious, it just seemed to overwhelm me. But something in me began to recognize that I had to bear with this. So I did stick it out. All the hatred and anger that had been suppressed in 30 years of living rose to its peak at this time. And then it burned itself out and ceased through meditation. It was a process of purification. To allow this process of cessation to work, we must be willing to suffer. This is why I stress the importance of patience. We have to open our minds to suffering because it is an embracing suffering. It is embracing suffering where suffering ceases. When we find that we are suffering physically or mentally, then we have to go to the actual suffering that is present. We open completely to it, welcome it, concentrate on it, allowing it to be what it is. That means we must be patient and bear with the unpleasantness of a particular condition. We have to endure boredom, despair, doubt, and fear in order to understand that they cease rather than running away from them. As long as we don't allow things to cease, we just create new karma that just reinforces our habits. When something arises, we grasp it and proliferate around it, and this complicates everything. Then these things will be repeated and repeated throughout our lives. We cannot go around following our desires and fears and expect to realize peace. We contemplate fear and desire so that they do not delude us anymore. We have to know what is deluding us before we can let go. Desire and fear are to be known as impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self. They are seen and penetrated so that suffering can burn itself away. It's very important here to differentiate between cessation and annihilation, that is, the desire that comes into the mind to get rid of something. Cessation is the natural ending of any condition that has arisen, so it is not desire. It is not something that we can create in the mind, but is the end of that which has begun, the death of which was born. Therefore, cessation is not a self. It does not come about from a sense of, I have to get rid of things. But when we allow that which has arisen to cease, to do that, one has to abandon craving, let go of it. It doesn't mean rejecting or throwing it away. Abandoning means letting go of it. Then, when it has ceased, you experience nirodha, cessation, emptiness, non-attachment. Nirodha is another word for nibbana. When you have let go of something, allowed it to cease, then what is left is peace. You can experience that peace through your own meditation. When you've let desire in your own mind, that which is left over is very peaceful. That is true peace. That is true peacefulness, the deathless. When you really know that as it is, you realize nirodha satcha, the truth of cessation, in which there's no self. There's alertness and clarity. The real meaning of bliss is that peaceful, transcendent consciousness. If we do not allow cessation, then we tend to operate from assumptions we make about ourselves without even knowing what we are doing. Sometimes it is not until we start meditating that we begin to realize how in our lives so much fear and lack of confidence comes from childhood experiences. I remember when I was a little boy, I had a very good friend who turned on me and rejected me. I was distraught for months about that. It left an indelible impression on my mind. Then I realized through meditation just how much a little incident like that had affected my future relationships with others. I always had a tremendous fear of rejection. I never even thought of it until that particular memory kept arising into my consciousness during the meditation. The rational mind knows that this is ridiculous to go around thinking about the tragedies of childhood. But if they keep coming up into consciousness when you're in middle age, maybe they are trying to tell you something about assumptions you're formed when you're a child. When you begin to feel memories or obsessive fears coming up in meditation, rather than becoming frustrated or upset by them, see them as something that can be accepted into consciousness so you can let go of them. You can arrange your daily life so you never have to look at these things. Then the conditions for them to actually arise are minimal. You can dedicate yourself to a lot of important causes and keep busy. Then these anxieties and nameless fears never become conscious. But what happens when you let go? The desire or obsession moves, and it moves to cessation. It ends. And then you have the insight that there is the cessation desire. So the third aspect of the Third Noble Truth is cessation has been realized. Cessation is to be realized. The Buddha has said this emphatically. This is a truth to be realized here and now. We do not have to wait until we die to find out if it's all true. This teaching is for living human beings like ourselves. Each one of us has to realize it. I may tell you about it and encourage you to do it, but I can't make you realize it. Don't think of it something remote or beyond your ability. When we talk about the Dhamma of truth, we can say that it's here and now, and that's something we can see for ourselves. We can turn to it. We can incline towards the truth. We can pay attention to the way it is, here and now, at this time and place. That's mindfulness, being alert and bringing attention to the way it is. Through mindfulness, we investigate the sense of self, this sense of me and mine, my body, my feelings, my memory, my thoughts, my views, my opinions, my house, my car, and so on. I'm going to go ahead and stop here because it's a little more time.
thinking about kind of the retreats coming to an end, sort of we can come to the cessation of the retreat, or we can come to the annihilation of the retreat.
My one key piece of Ajahn Sumedho's teaching is, he says very clearly at the beginning of the Second Noble Truth, the cause of suffering is clinging to desire, rather than oftentimes that clinging to desire is omitted. And I'm curious, that this is a very early work of his, so it's not a new thing he came is. And I know there were perhaps particular incidents with Mongpo-sha where he learned this. But do you know how does this coming from like a previous statement in the forest tradition, or the Ajahn Sumedho?
That we chanted every morning.
I guess clinging.
Rupa upadana kanto, vedana upadana kanto, sangha upadana kanto, sankhara upadana kanto.
I guess Ajahn Jeff would probably make a distinction between the clinging to the khanda is first truth, and then craving is the cause of it, rather than a cling to desire. But perhaps that's too redundant.
That's how you end up suffering. Okay, it's just trying to make those parsing it out too fine. So that you actually miss what the result is. So it's important to pay attention to that nature of just that movement of mind, and recognizing Ajahn Sumedho is making distinctions between, say, desire and clinging, and also just trying to recognize, because I think especially as Westerners, we tend to take an ideal stand, and forget that, there's all sorts of movements and impulses and draws to sense objects, to the aspects of being, that we feel should be annihilated, or we feel is problematic, and fail to recognize it's the actual clinging and identification to it that is the problem, as opposed to the nature of mind or the nature of experience that we get hungry, we get drawn to a sound and we feel we should be like that. Or we neglect to pay attention to it, and then we get caught in it. And so learning how to recognize what's that movement of mind? What's the effect of it? What's the result?
Lungpour, regarding that, aren't they both sufferings, but we're adding suffering onto the suffering? Like, if you have a toothache, and that is suffering, but if you don't have mental suffering from it, you're not adding on to the suffering. So that's like the greater suffering is the reaction to it.
Yeah, I mean, because particularly with in the realm of feeling, and there's a natural experience of what is, that is how the Buddha defines dukkha vedana. But that's not the actual problem, that we experience pain when we've got a toothache. But the problem is the fear, aversion, agitation that arises because of that. And we can work with that.
Yeah.
We can't eliminate although it is an indication that one should go and see the dentist.
Yeah.
It's telling you something, but it isn't necessarily, it isn't a statement of your the hopelessness of your being.
But the second is preventing liberation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So just reflecting on like the Tankachana's observation or perspective. I mean, what I found too is that I tend to, you know, my tendency is to like, how do I word it? Like be a fundamentalist or be a literalist,
yeah,
or think that like, I mean, I did it just during this talk right here, like trying to like take Ajahn Jeff's opinion about things, Bhikkhu Nyanananda's opinion about things, and Ajahn Sumedho's opinion about things, and like, you know, wait a minute, he's using this word for this,
right,
he's using this word for this, yeah, and they're not connecting, and you know, and yeah, it reminds me actually of like yesterday Ajahn Mahendra was reading about using that mythology of the Buddha calling the earth to witness,
right,
and how like that's like that was an interpretation of his,
yeah,
and that's a, you know, it, but it wasn't like did it happen, was it true, but more like using those like using it as a reflection, and like the interpretation can stand on its own and you don't have to make that connect with other interpretations,
right.
And so even though, because I've gotten mixed up when certain teachers use certain keywords in a certain way,
yeah,
and other teachers use the same keyword to refer to a different aspect of experience,
yeah,
and trying to make them commensurable is a fool's errand.
Yes, yes. I mean, that is dukkha. So that's the important piece of that, you know, and whatever... you know, all these different teachings and expressions of teachings, we don't have to actually find out or try to make them match but trying to figure what are they pointing to, and the Buddha is always pointing back to suffering, that quality of discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease, discomfort, uncertainty that we feel within experience, and realizing, okay, we've got a way out, and those different teachings they don't actually have to mesh, they do mesh in terms of when we bring it back into that open Aiko Dharma, leading it inwards, drawing it inwards, experiencing what the quality of our experience is, and how do we come to peace with it. Okay.